Hello and welcome to episode number 30 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
Coming up on the show, a man that probably for most Illini fans and actually many sports fans across the country doesn't need much of an introduction, Will Leach. One of the more prominent Illini fans out there, Robert, and I know your relationship goes back a ways.
Yeah, I mean, I can say whatever. He's not on yet, so I can talk about him and he can't get embarrassed. When I started my first blog in 2009, I just randomly reached out to him. He had just left Deadspin at the time and was doing other things. He had started Deadspin 4 years prior or something. And I'm like, hey, you understand blogging and you went to Illinois. Can you guide me through some things? And I asked him at least 15 questions over the next 10 years. And he was always so gracious to reach out and be like, hey, do this and think about this. And maybe you don't want to do that and all that kind of stuff. So he guided my entire career for years. And, you know, he was journalism here. I was not. So I had no idea what I was doing. So he was very, very gracious. And then in 2024, he reached out to me and said, hey, I've got this itch I need to scratch of writing about Illini basketball. Would you mind if I did it for Illini Board? And I'm like, no, I would not mind if Will Leach wants to write a column on Illini Board. So he's been doing that. So it's great. I'm really excited to have him on.
Well, we'll tell you a few more details about him, but do encourage you to check him out if you haven't looked up who Will Leach is. And he's also just an enjoyable conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've had many great conversations. I mean, he showed up at the Duke tailgate in September, and he was there, and he hung out with all the Illini fans at the tailgate before and after the game and helped light the eye and everything else. So it was really great.
This is not always true of every sports writer. He is a sports writer who loves sports.
Absolutely. 100%.
And he writes very well.
Yep.
So as we get ready for the NCAA tournament, without further ado, episode number 30 featuring Will Leach. But first, speaking of,
we must light the eye. It's Blue Eye March, so let's do it.
Welcome back to Light the Eye. Will Leach is here. He is an alum of the University of Illinois, a former editor of the Daily Illini, currently a columnist with The Athletic and The Washington Post, a contributing editor with The New York Magazine. He is an author of several novels, including Lloyd McNeil's Last Ride, a contributor to IlliniBoard.com, a native of Mattoon, a co-host of the Seeing Red podcast, which is devoted to the St. Louis Cardinals' jealousy of the Chicago Cubs. Mm-hmm. And, no, I'm sorry, it's just the St. Louis Cardinals.
That is definitely, you're outnumbered here. That is definitely a franchise with the championships that make Cardinal fans very, very jealous.
Touche.
All I'm saying is for years and years and years, this is the only time I will even make any part of this conversation tint in this direction. But Cardinals fans have been arguing for years and years and years that if the Cubs ever won the World Series, the world was going to end. Well. So, anyway,
touche. And maybe most importantly, for the purposes of our podcast today, you are an Illini fan. Will, welcome to Light the Eye. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I get to do that Seeing Red podcast with the great Bernie Miklas. So if there are any Cardinal fans that know Bernie Miklas, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for, and I, of all the things you've talked about, literally, and I say this without irony or joking at all, none of them mean personally more to me than writing the power rankings for the Illini Board. It is so, like, literally, I was talking to Matt Norlander, the great Matt Norlander, who's an old friend of mine for CBS Sports, and every once in a while he'll like text me and be like, Will, did you just write 5,000 words in the middle of your week? And with like, and like 800 of them were about Steve Roth. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, this is what we do here. This is stuff I gotta get out of my brain.
You and Robert are cut from the same cloth.
Yes, I am.
In that vein. At 5,000 words, no problem.
No problem.
I could talk for 5,000 words, but writing 5,000 words is a whole different thing.
It's the belief that people want to read 5,000
words. Oh, I have no belief. I have no belief whatsoever. I just have to do it so I don't die.
Yes, yes.
Well, I would be most fascinated probably to just listen to you and Robert talk. But since I have a microphone, I'll start with a question. And as we are on the brink of the field of 64 in the NCAA tournament, your thoughts, Illinois men's hoops as a 3 seed going into this one this year?
You know, they obviously missed out an opportunity to be a 2 seed in St. Louis. I think we all thought there was a stretch there where up until it was 33-10, it looked like I'm like, could this be a 1 seed? I think we all kind of thought that was a possibility. I was out there in Los Angeles. I was at that game. I texted my family. Oh wow, we are good, and everything has gone wrong since then. So I take personal responsibility for that. I think things have gone wrong, and I think that's an overstatement. I think that's really kind of the thing with this team. I understand the emotion involved when a team goes 0-4 over the span of a month in overtime. That is very, very frustrating. It can make you feel as if there is something fundamentally flawed about the team. And I think there are certainly things that they need to work on. I think they're stomping teams out is something that they're not as skilled at as they stomping good teams out is actually something that they're not as skilled as they should be. But like, for crying out loud, I tend to be not dissimilar from Robert in this situation. These things, the math's usually math. And at a certain level, I know that's dissatisfying. I know as a fan, that's dissatisfying to watch. But at a certain level, it's disappointing that they fell to a 3 seed. I don't think that means the team is not good anymore or somehow lost something. There are players that aren't playing as well. But it was funny. I went to dinner with my father and my son, both named William Brian Leach, after the Wisconsin game. And we were sitting down at dinner, and we complained, and we groused, and Tommy's not playing well, and Stoyakovic had nothing to say, and just all the things that went wrong, just like we have after each of those 4 overtime losses. Almost so many things went wrong in those games, and they still lost in overtime to really good teams in games that they should have won and had big leads. That's my general thought process. I don't necessarily think that because they lost a 15-point lead with 11 minutes to go, that's going to happen every time they have a 15-minute lead or there's some sort of fundamental emotional flaw with the team. I think weird stuff happens, and all told, I will roll the dice with a team that does have the number one offense in basketball. And I would say for the first half against Wisconsin, looked like it was improving defensively a little bit, at least being good enough defensively. Obviously, that looked like that in the second half. But the point is this is a really talented team that has the capability to get to the Final Four. Whether they will or whether they won't depends on matchups, depends on luck and all of these things. But the notion that I've somehow lost faith in this team because they lost 4 games in overtime to really good teams and games that they had big leads, I have a hard time doing that.
You know, Brad Underwood had a couple of comments in the last 2 post-game press conferences, especially after the loss to Wisconsin. Well, he followed it up. After he was asked about close losses at Maryland, kind of dismissed the question and said that's crap, I think is what he said, and then followed it up here with the loss to Wisconsin, that I don't like narratives. I like solving problems.
Right.
You're a writer. Robert and I, last episode, we took a trip to narrative land. And I think Robert is a governor there.
Yes.
At least a provincial, you know, whatever you call it. Yeah. So in your mind, I mean, you live in writing and narratives, but can you say, yeah, there's no narrative there. Yes, there's been close losses, and they've all come kind of bunched up here in the latter third of the season. Can you also put that aside?
I think that coaches for good reason don't like narratives, and narratives are constructed. That doesn't mean they don't matter. And if Illinois loses to Penn or North Carolina or VCU in a game where they have a 15-point lead and lose that lead late, it doesn't matter whether that's mathing or bad luck. That's a narrative that's going to stick, and it's going to affect Underwood's lives and all of our lives as sports fans. And that's just the way that sports works. And so the idea that I understand that coaches don't think in narratives, they think play by play. They think of this matchup. They think of all the schemes and all the work that they're doing. But ultimately, narratives do matter whether we want them to or not, whether coaches don't want them to or not. The idea, like, it's going to, if that happens, if they don't make it to the Sweet 16 and they lose in the way that they have lost in this last month, we might intellectually be able to say, well, you know, the math worked out and it really was just kind of bad luck and things fell the wrong way. No one is going to react that way. And frankly, no one should react that way. And so, you know, I think that that's kind of how I feel about it. I think those we can often, what narratives really are, ideally, narratives are a way to go back after something has happened and go back, okay, well, now I see this happen and that connected to this. And you can see the old hindsight's 2020. And the reason hindsight's 2020 is because we already know what happened. And so we can there connect it. One of my favorite things about sports is again, as a Cardinals fan, the idea that the David Freese triple and homer, it's my favorite experience as a sports fan until Illinois wins the national championship eventually. It's like the greatest thing, followed closely by the Illinois-Arizona game. The thing about it is when Freeze hit that triple, before he hit that triple, no one thought, oh, David Freeze is going to keep them alive and they're going to hit a triple and come back and win this game. But then when it happens, there's a moment of shock, and then we just absorb it as reality. And then we go back and say, okay, how did we get to that point? How did we get here? We are at a moving target right now. It's sports. It's random. Weird stuff happens. The ball bounces strange. You know, who knows how we think about John Gross if they don't get that bad call against Miami. Right? Like, they just weird things just go careening off in all sorts of different directions. And only afterward can we kind of piece them together. I think that those things matter. And so I think trying to predict what's going to happen next about Illinois because they've lost these games so closely is not the right way to do it. However, if they lose another one that way and then we look back, we can say, okay, well, they clearly need to work on this. And frankly, it's not a ridiculous idea because you can say, well, they took the foot off the throat of the Wisconsin game. Yeah, you can also say that they had two guards that played like they were, like their life depended on it. And Boswell didn't, right? And I don't mean that as a criticism of Boswell. I'm saying I don't like Boswell, but like he didn't play the way that they played. And so we can say, well, they blew the lead again. Yeah, or this team has these guys and we don't have guys like that. These things all converge together because it's sports and it's random. And ultimately, we're all just guessing, including the coaches.
There's also a very good possibility that an NCAA tournament game will end as a close game.
Yeah, it works, turns that way. These teams are good, right?
And, yes.
And
so write your narrative now.
Well, and yep. a lot of this, and Robert, you know, you obviously can appreciate this. A lot of this is, you know, it's a lot, like, it's stuff that we think about, but like Keaton Wagler is not thinking, yes, oh my gosh, I'm so tormented by what happened against Loyola that I can't be straight. Like, he doesn't know. It has no connection to his life whatsoever. So we are the ones that are attached to this. Now, Brad Underwood feels that. And I'm sure the coaching staff feels that. And I'm sure everyone at Whitman feels that. And all the donors and everyone around him, we all feel that way. It's the job of those guys to keep that out of Keaton Wagler's head and make that not a thing for him. But the idea that Underwood's life is so much harder and will remain harder until he makes the Final Four because of that Loyola game, you can call that a narrative all you want. It's also reality.
I'm always fascinated by, you talk to players and, you know, reporters will ask questions about certain leads or whatever and this and that. And players are kind of just unaware of things. Like,
they're kids.
Hey, man, I'm not looking up at the scoreboard.
Right.
Like, you know, you're sitting there watching the score bug in the corner and the time and the timeouts left. And I'm just playing basketball. Oh, wow, they got it to 9 before we cut it to 3? I had no idea. Like, we're just playing ball, you know.
They're also kids.
That's always fascinating. Yes, absolutely. Kids.
And we know how kids are, right? Like, I literally got having hollering at my son this morning because I told him to unload the dishwasher 3 times. And he'd forgotten that I told him each of the 3 times. And this person is now learning and going to school and interacting with the world and having no idea what's going on because they're children. And so, it's important, but like, to me, Keaton Wagler specifically, I mean, he is 4 years older than my 8th grader. I mean, that is a hard, it's always weird when you're adults and you're emotionally connected. The story I always tell, I've written about this for Illini Board, is the time where I was speaking to an Illinois journalism class one time, and I looked in the back of the class and Jalen Tate was there. And if you remember Jalen Tate, of course, he was a kind of frustrating point guard for Illinois. But like, you know, and so I gotten like, he needs to be better. He's got to be better. We need it. And then you see him and he's like, oh, he's a 19-year-old kid with a trapper keeper. And so I yep. think that does get forgotten a little bit sometimes. And I think that's good. I think it's okay. I think it's all it's okay for fans to be like, you know what? We're living in a separate reality narrative than these players are doing. We're bringing all of our stuff and all of this years of stuff and this. They're not. And I find that ultimately kind of encouraging, actually. It, absolutely. It helps me feel a little bit more safe.
Keaton Wagler, born in 2007.
2007.
If everybody wants to feel.
Yeah, so it's fair to say he's not mad at Sean May.
Yes, yes. Unaware of that 2 years before his birth.
Right. But I did hear Sean May is trying to get eligibility back for one game.
no, thank you. No, thank you. Yeah, so I was looking at the national championship odds last night, and Illinois is pretty universally seventh in all the odds, which is a little surprising as a three seed. You'd think they'd be ninth as the highest. They were 10th on the seed list. But in terms of the betting public, Illinois is seventh. So I tried to think of what are the years where seventh or higher. And I think there's only four, maybe five. I mean, the obvious ones are 89, a one seed, 05, obviously. They had the best odds in the country. And then 21, they were top four in that. And then in 01, I believe Arizona had better odds than Illinois, and that was the big thing going into that matchup in the Elite Eight of Illinois is the one seed and Arizona is the two seed, but Arizona is the favorite here. So this is really, in my 53 years on Earth, it's either this or 84. I don't know. I couldn't find the odds on 84 when they were a two seed, but it was probably like this. Look, we talk about the tournament as being like you get these, you just keep swinging at it, right? You know, you get these shots. It didn't work as a one seed in 2021, but they, you know, certain teams and won it when they were a four seed and they finally got there at this and all that kind of stuff. This is another swing at it. And that's really the takeaway for me going into this tournament is that this is about the fifth or sixth best Illini team as far as odds of advancing far in my 53 years. And that's a big deal.
Without question. And listen, I think part of the reason that people are more frustrated with this team now than I think they probably should be is that idea that it's usually pretty clear. Right. This is the thing about being an Illinois fan. Like Illinois has never sneaked into a Final Four. They either have a super awesome team that we expect to make the Final Four and makes it. And then we all like, oh, they could have won the national championship. But they never have like that North Carolina State season for a couple of years ago where they stumble in and then just get hot at the right time. Or even the year that Indiana made the national championship game under Mike Davis, which no one remembers now. But but certainly was, made the Final Four, right? Illinois doesn't have years like that. That to me that's the reason the Loyola year was so crushing. But it's also worth noting that like the Connecticut loss was bad. But you couldn't look at that game and be like, oh, that was a Final Four team. I mean, they just lost by 30 to it. Like I think that that's why that loss didn't affect me as much as the Loyola loss did, was because that was – no one thought of that team. I think we need to get out of that mindset because I think that's what's been frustrating over the last month after the Purdue game. I think everyone at that point was like, oh, this is – when they were up 33-10 on UCLA, it was like, this is that team. Like, we have one of those special teams. Again, whatever way you want to put it, maybe you include 84, maybe you include 01. For me, the big three are 05, are 89, and the 21 team, the one that lost the goal. Those to me are the big three. Those are the ones, they were all one seeds. Those are the ones that you thought, this is the one that's going to do it. And I think we thought we had that. We may still, in fact, have that. But I do think that because this team faltered a little down the stretch, we have this sense that like, oh, okay, well, then it's not one of those teams. Why isn't it one of those teams? I thought it was one of those teams, as opposed to kind of appreciating the arc of what all of this has happened. I mean, to me, this is why the Wagler thing is such a miracle, right? The idea that it's hard to imagine now. Like, did you see the interview with his dad where his dad was like, yeah, we were just hoping he wasn't going to redshirt. Like, we were hoping he'd get a chance to, like, play this year, which was reasonable, right? When you saw the two freshmen come in, you're like, okay, one of those guys is probably going to redshirt because Boswell's going to be the guy here, and you don't really need that guy. And obviously, we've got Petrovic. You know, he's going to be the point guard. We're not going to need that stuff. And it turned out, not only did he not redshirt, the championship ambitions that we have for this team and the greatest offense in college basketball are entirely because of him. And so, like, that, and they are. And I'm not saying that the team is not good outside of him, but when he, like, the switch was when he became the point guard. When they're like, you're the point guard now. Once that change happened after the Connecticut game, if you go back and watch the Connecticut game, it's very weird to be like, hey, so, like, it's weird to see Wagler not really have his place and not really feel comfortable and not really be in charge. And they just clearly didn't have an identity yet at all. I mean, Petrovic was one of the best players in that game when you kind of think about it. So that once they figured that out, and that was, you know, Thanksgiving. That was December before we figured out, hey, this team could be really something special. The idea, the roller coaster of that, that's narrative. The all that matters to me is that peak. Can they win at Purdue? Can they win at Michigan State? Can they win these super, super tough games against really good teams? We've seen them reach that quality. Now it's just the tournament and see what happens.
Well, the other thing was, coming into the season, you didn't know entirely what to expect. By the time there was a 12-game winning streak, at that point it was peak, oh, is this a national championship caliber team? But the beginning of the year is, I think there's some really good talented pieces on this team. Wagler wasn't really part of that conversation. You know, they'll probably contend to be in the top third of the Big Ten, maybe push for top three. That actually kind of turned out to be true. But everybody had, I think, more expectations of Michigan and Purdue, at least coming into the season. And Illinois was more of a wild card because there were so many new pieces. The talent was there, but will they coalesce? Will they gel? It's just different than those years past where, oh, our sophomores are now juniors, our juniors are now seniors, and we know what's coming. That's just what they're hoping for with women's basketball next year, is they're all going to stay, they're all going to get a year older, a year better, and you add a piece or something, and they could be, you know, exceptional next year. But it's interesting that, like, the 21 team, yeah, you kind of knew the team would be really good, and you certainly knew that going into 04-05.
I also think a factor in this is these teams are also different. Underwood's teams are also different, and I think that's a factor in this too. That's something that Underwood should be lauded for, without question. Remember, he came in with the idea that, like, we're going to be 8 seconds or less and we're going to be pressing and all this stuff was going to happen. He learned fairly quickly that it was not going to be probably working, at least with the roster that he had. And then he gets Kofi, and then we turn into an inside out team, and then he switches it again. And now to the point where, like, you joked about a player coming back, Sean May coming back. If Kofi came back for one more year eligibility right now, I'm not sure he fits on this team. And it's true, right? Like,
I'd be willing. First team All-American.
I'd be willing to try.
But you're right.
But that's the thing, because the style is so different.
The bigs have to shoot.
Everything is so different. And that is Underwood shifting on the fly. And frankly, considering how much college basketball has changed so dramatically since Brad Underwood has been fired, since he's been hired, that's a super important skill to have. And so I think that has led to this idea of, it feels like you're swerving more than you actually are. You actually have good, like, point. Good teams and consistently good teams. They play differently in the roster shift. But the notion, you're exactly right. I couldn't find anybody coming in this year that thought, oh, Illinois is a national championship contender. There was hopeful. There were some ideas. I think Stojakovic was, frankly, the one that people were most excited about coming in. Wagler, again, we were excited about him, but I don't think no one thought this coming, including Wagler, including Underwood. The idea that we are in this spot after being in this spot 2 years ago with an entirely different team, and 4 years ago with an entirely different team and an entirely different style of play and no crossovers and new guys every year, and losing someone like Merez, who we all thought was going to be absolutely key to this team, this is good. This is a good thing. And it doesn't feel like a good thing sometimes, because it feels like this, things are changing all the time and it's hard to get your bearing. Who is this team exactly? Well, what this team is one of the best 10 teams in the country when nobody thought they were going to be that. And all they are is a team that's lost some really, really close games in frustrating fashion, but clearly have the talent and have the ability and have the schemes to be able to make this happen. Whether it will happen or not, we'll certainly find out for the tournament. But the notion that somehow things are chaotic or there's no real consistent thing. A, there is no real consistent thing in college basketball for anywhere anymore. But B, this flexibility this is good. This is what you want from your coach in this era. And I'm to me, that's why I'm excited about it, even while the Loyola Original Sin will continue to hang over everyone until they get into the Final Four.
Yeah. The original sin of Loyola.
Yes. The, you know, I was thinking the other day about 2002. So, you know, that's kind of the opposite season. It's the season I feel like Illini fans don't remember how frustrating it was. Like, number three preseason. Legitimately, all fall, we were talking about, like, this Illinois team can win the national championship. The 0-1-0-2 team, this is a national championship. They were number two, number three in the preseason pool, moved to number two the next week. Then everything kind of fell apart, fell to a four seed by the tournament, this and that. It's always interesting to me how certain seasons get shifted, and then everybody starts to talk about it like, well, obviously 0-2 wasn't like 0-1. Well, no, 0-2 was the most frustrating season I can remember as an Illini basketball fan. It's just nobody remembers that because we have these, oh, Self left for Kansas. He was so great. And then Weber couldn't maintain after the national title game. And we just have developed these narratives of here's what this coach is, here's what that coach is, this and that. And you're right that this season is this opposite of 17 in the preseason poll. No one was thinking top 10 team, number seven in odds for a national title. Keaton Wagler's probably what made that happen. But yes, this is one of those, overall, as frustrating as things have been once we got to number five in the polls, this is one of those, wow, what a special season when we didn't expect it. Let's see how far they can go kind of seasons.
Yeah, but listen, also, we need to not forget the historical aspect of this. One of the reasons that Illini fans are like this is because this is where we expect to be. Right. Like, yes, and there was a stretch of like a decade where we didn't make the tournament, for crying out loud. So having gone through, and you remember as vividly as I do, the worst part of the stretch where they were not making the tournament, other than not getting to watch your team in the tournament every year, which is really remarkable. I tried to explain to my kids. I was like, seriously, 10 years. like 10 years. They went once and played one game. And now we're like, oh, we fell to a three seed. And I get it. I get that frustration. But that entire time, the worry was, man, are we ever going to get this back? Like, is there a whole generation of kids that don't even know who Lou Hinson is, or don't know or any of these players are? And we're just we're Nebraska football fans who are like, oh, well, you know, trust me, we're supposed to be that. Are we ever going to get back? To me, that's what's so great about this time. Yes, it is frustrating they've not gotten that Final Four. And if they did not end up not getting the Final Four, Underwood will have to answer for that. And that will be a part of the legacy and a part of the things we talk about. But to be back here, never minding just being the tournament every year, but to be to the point where we're like, we are actively disappointed that we fell to a number three seed because of a loss in the Big Ten tournament, should not be overlooked, because just like you said, it's taking those shots. It's getting back in. It's being able to adjust. Again, 17 preseason, now they're going to be in the top 10. Not ranked heading into the last preseason. I'm looking at the basketball reference page. They were, like 2 years ago, they were 25 in the AP poll preseason. The idea that that was a team that was going to get to Elite Eight. These are adjustments. These things evolve as the season goes along. The tournament is going to affect everything. Like it always does. That's what college basketball is. It affects how we talk about this stuff and how we always talk about this stuff. One of these years, you'd think you're going to break through. And if not, that'll be something they'll have to answer for. But for now, this is a pretty good place to be.
I've been using, for whatever reason, using Syracuse this year as the team of, like, I just want everybody to remember what that felt like. Yeah. And Syracuse got some so Syracuse, as you know, Will, when you were in school, when I was in school in the 90s, in the 2000s, like Syracuse was a top 10 program in the country. They were there every year. They have six Final Fours. They have a national title in 2003. They are a epic blue blood-ish program. I mean, some people only claim there's five or six college basketball blue buds, but that's another topic. With Syracuse, I just want people to, like, I've been saying this, like, I want, go look what Syracuse fans feel like right now when Brian Hodgson from South Florida turned them down. They have a coach from Western New York who grew up there, coached at Buffalo with Nate Oates, then went to Alabama. He turned around Arkansas State in 2 years. He turned a South Florida team with 13 wins into a 28-win team that's in the tournament this year. He is the perfect coach to be the next Boeheim in Western New York. And he said, no. That feeling,
yeah.
Let me tell you, from the 10 years ago, it's the worst possible fan feeling on earth. You know what you are, and you can't get back there. And people are like, Illinois basketball? Who cares about Illinois basketball? I don't know. When was the last time they were in a tournament? 8 years ago? And you just have this, like, no, you don't understand what we can be. We went to 21 tournaments in 25 years. And two of the four we missed were Bruce Pearl's fault. And, you know, there was just so much, like, here's who we are. That feeling of, like, we're back will never be lost for me. I think maybe you had to live through it to be there. But that feeling of going through the desperation of where Syracuse fans are right now is never going to be lost on me, that, like, hey, this is where we're at. There's not a question in there, but, like, like, I know that you're one person who is very much this, like, guys, do you remember what it was like to feel so desperate to get it back? Having it back and being a three seed is incredible to me.
And the one thing that never went away during that time, and I can vouch for this because I lived in New York for 13 years, and I went through so I lived in New York the entire time after the Final Four year, national championship game, and then when things started to fall apart. And I remember, and Illinois would play at the Garden like every other year, and I would always go see them, and there were always Illini fans there. Even when the team was not good, it would always surprise the people at the Garden when, like, wow, there's so many Illini fans here, and they're not good. Like that support was always there. And that's the thing that gives me hope generally moving forward about whatever happens, where Illinois is. We live in an age now where fan support is not just like something in the air that hopefully helps you out at some that hopefully will get rewarded at some point. It is ammunition. It's food. It's manna. It's the thing that actually fuels programs. If Illinois, you see this. I think you're starting to see this in a lot of teams about college basketball. That, like, I think you see this a little. I think you're seeing it with USC. I think UCLA is potentially in danger of this, because while they are historically great, I don't their fan base is not Illinois or Iowa's or Michigan's. I mean, their current fan base has a softer middle. They don't travel that well. Illinois always travels well. They are obsessed. We're obsessed with this team, and we're obsessed with this basketball program. That is support. That's a backbone for the program moving forward. It makes me feel better that as long as you now, this doesn't always work. Indiana, for crying out loud. Do you realize Indiana has won one tournament game in 10 years? Indiana, when you were talking about blue bloods earlier and being like, oh, I guarantee you Indiana considers itself a blue blood. They have won one tournament game in 10 years. That is worse than Illinois was. Like, if we didn't make a tournament for a long time. They've only made the tournament twice. They've made the tournament twice in 10 years and only won one game. That is insane that Indiana could be there. That to me is one of the reasons I find myself having a lot of faith in where Illinois is and not getting too frustrated. I get it. Being a fan is about being frustrated. Until Illinois wins a national championship, fans are going to be frustrated. They'll be happy for like a year and a half, and then we'll get frustrated again. Trust me, I live in Athens, Georgia. I know how quickly two national championships erode, and you're like, oh, well, what's Kirby doing over there? Like, that happens real fast. But until they win that national championship, it's always going to feel like, oh, we're just never going to get there. But to be where Illinois is right now is a really great place.
Speaking of Indiana, Will, you know who is going to be the pace car driver at the Indy 500?
I know he won't be smiling while he's doing it.
And speaking of Georgia, probably won't be speeding either. It's Kurt Cignetti. So maybe Indiana just made a little trade with whoever they have to trade off with to win a football national championship. But that actually leads me to this question. We talked about it in the last pod, Robert and I, and maybe you saw the graphic out there on social media. Illinois is one of 10 schools that in last two years, has put both of their basketball teams in the NCAA tournament and put a football team in a bowl game. That is a remarkable collective amount of success. Now, if Illinois men's hoops was having the success that women's basketball was having right now, per the conversation we've just had, you know, there'd be a lot of grumbling, you know, whereas, of course, women are coming from out of the valley to three tournaments in 4 years. And, you know, the needle's pointing up with them. And football would like to get into the college football playoff, of course. And but the collective, let's call it average success amongst those three programs is pretty remarkable. And here we are. We're on a podcast for Illini fans with Illini fans. It'd be easier to sit here and let's glow about how great they are. But isn't that sort of a fact? I mean this is these are sunny days.
I'm going to temper this by saying that every single time that I am there for an Illinois football home game and they do the pregame run, I am faster than Josh Whitman. I'm just going to toss that out right now. I beat him every time. We talk about this.
That's
every
why
time.
I'm just letting you know. I've been on some of those runs, and that's why I have not seen you there.
Yes, I'm a runner. I'm a runner, and every time I go, I live in the New York Marathon last year. I run all the time, and I beat Whitman. So I'm just going to temper everything I'm about to say with that, just to let you know that I am, as my kids might say, trying not to glaze him. But I would say that that's the difference, right? Like, that's the difference. Whitman came in, like, I. It's funny. Do you remember what was the term? After we had to have the interim football coach, it's not ideal.
Yes. That was we'll put ideal. A dagger through the heart of the program, but it's not ideal.
It's not ideal. That kind of not won't put a dagger through the program and not ideal was sort of the defensive crouch that the entire athletic department was in for a very long period of time. The idea of, well, we should be this, but we've got to fight. But we're just trying to sell. We've had to deal with this. We had this situation with the disastrous Beckman hire, like all of these, everyone was in a defensive crouch, and to the point where, like, and after Weber, like Gross, who has turned out to be a very good coach and has turned out to do great at Akron, but there was a sense of, hey, I just wanted to get us back to where we get back to the tournament every year. We just get back to a little bit normal. Whitman comes in, and him and Gross were close. I don't mean to say that he like threw Gross out or that Lovie Smith was a great hire or anything, but the notion that Whitman comes in and says, you know what, we're freaking Illinois. I went here. I love this place. I know what this place could be. I'm going to do what I can to make it that. You see Underwood come in, and you don't see Underwood come in particularly modest or saying, oh, well, you know, we're hoping to get back to the heyday of getting into the tournament. And like, he's like, we can win the national championship here. This is Illinois. This is a special place. To see everybody see the opportunity, that feels like something I had not seen at Illinois in a long time. Until Whitman, who is slower than me, got here, and I mean that, and so I find myself there. Anytime you're in a public facing position like Whitman, there's always going to be debates, and there's always going to be people that say you should be doing this or you should be doing this. I mean, to me, Robert, you've written about this, and again, I'm trying not to be overly. There are criticisms that can be made of anyone in any public space. The change in Illinois was Whitman. Like, that's the change. Like, that is the very clear pivot when we went from being recessive, oh, we're just a little scared of our own shadow, and hopefully it will all work out, to we are here to do stuff. We are here to win. We will win. That was the whole thing. that sort of clear leadership and direction, to me, that's what changed everything. And again, let's not say it's been entirely perfect, or it's been there's been stops and starts, and things that are not going exactly right. But man, that's what has changed everything at Illinois, and it's turned it. And now the fundraising is huge, and now all of these things that we imagined Illinois could be, they are those things. Now, there's more still to do. But if you're telling me, like, I cover, like Teresa Grintz was there when Illinois was a women's coach when I was at Illinois. Mm-hmm. And it was super exciting. I actually wrote a column for the Daily Illini arguing that she should take over for Henson, which she was very flattered by and said, no thanks. I think after they not gotten Jimmy Collins. And the point is that, like, at a certain level, even then, that it was, well, maybe we'll make the tournament. I think they made the tournament once or during the 4 years I was there with the women's team. The notion that now this women's team not only is in the tournament every year, but we're like, wow, next year they get everybody back. This could become something kind of special. That was not a conversation anyone was having. And it's fun. Whenever we talk, Robert, you know, we talk about Illinois football, like, down here, it has been hilarious that I'm an Illinois football fan for like a decade. I've been here for 13 years. And the first decade, it's like, oh, that's cute. That's right. They play football too. No, people aren't doing that anymore. People are not doing that anymore. Now, part of that is Indiana. You see a team that can rise like that. But to the, all the things that like we, I think Illinois, what Whitman did was prove that the, hey, if you just win six games a year and get into a bowl game every year, we'll build a statue out of you. Hey, if we get you back to the tournament every year, we'll build. Nope, we're aiming bigger now. And I think that is what really changed the whole mindset of the athletic department of the university.
As I said to you before we started here, I've been rewatching Mad Men. And obviously there's this, Whitman and Don Draper have the same voice. And you know, people have been saying that for years.
Don Draper's real last name is Whitman.
That's
in the show.
A great, great point. That just hit me now.
He stole the identity of his grandfather. Inside. Yes, yes.
I mean, if there's a movie made about Josh Whitman,
yes.
John Hamm's playing.
John Hamm, and he's got too good a hair to do a bald cap. He's not good.
Yes. The issue, the reason I bring that up is because obviously, if you haven't seen Mad Men, what Don Draper, John Hamm, is so good at is in the meeting where he's selling something to a client and he can use words. And I have said for years, Whitman is very similar to that. Like I can, you mentioned We Will Win, which was a very smart, again, in a Sterling Cooper way here of let's put together words that people will rally around. But when he fired Gross, that was the Champ is Here press conference. Where he said, everybody remember that? Remember Assembly Hall rocking in 2005 and they're playing the Champ is Here, you know, the, I believe it was Muhammad Ali quote and this and that and all that stuff. And he, you know, he brought everybody around that kind of moment. And he has done that with all these phrases and all these other press conferences, you know, his opening press conference, holding up his Illini helmet saying, I look at this every day and I think of playing here. You know, he knows how to capture the moment. And it's so important when we're having these like discussions of how did this all turn around to have leadership setting that kind of goal. So I'm so glad you brought that up because it really is this kind of Don Draper, like I'm going to sell a vision here and you're going to have to stay with me because you might not see it. But here is the vision, and I'm going to lead along that vision, and everybody get on board, and it has happened. So,
and just ahead. to be clear, the comparison between Josh Whitman and Don Draper stops at the philandering, right?
Yes, 100%. Yes.
The ability to sell and lead, though.
Yes.
And I would say, too, another thing that I think that it should not be underappreciated, just like the basic blocking and tackling competence. I know this is not a fun thing to bring up a lot of the times, but like what happened with the Terrence Shannon case a couple of years ago could have derailed so many things. From one of the things that Whitman gave a press conference almost immediately after that happened, and he said, hey, you know what, when I got here I saw what had happened at Baylor and I saw what had happened to other schools where an athletic director was making a guy in charge of the athletic department was in charge of doing disciplinary stuff on situations where he did not have all the facts but in the middle of a moving target. So I set up this panel. And I've got this panel here that is independent of me. What they do, I will say. That's just smart. I've seen athletic directors. I cover college sports. I've seen athletic directors fall because they get in the middle of the battle. And they're like, well, we got to win this game. So we got to – and they start making decisions for the wrong reasons, and the whole thing collapses. I'm not – and the Shannon thing turned out – again, I actually think it was handled well across the board. But that's foresight. That's a seeing here's what a problem someone else had. I'm going to cut that off the past because what I'm trying to do here, I also know the little things or the side things that could derail it. To also be prepared for that as well, it's just basic competence for a pretty slow guy.
For someone who really struggles in the final third of a 5K.
No, for the record, yes. He is like, he does not know that we're racing.
okay.
To be clear as possible, I just
who's
know that
guy who just sprinted.
I just know that I'm getting there first. If he really went all out, he would beat me, but he hasn't yet.
That's funny. I've never met a competitor that doesn't want to compete.
yeah,
so
but
he may know your
race. But he's also with, like, the donors show up to that race. Like, he's got people much more important to talk to than me. He can't be like, oh, I'm sorry, I have to beat Will Leach. I can't talk to you about that potential gift that you're coming right now. I have to smoke Leach.
Are you saying that's why he's not lagging back to talk to me?
Yeah.
with the 11-minute milers? Mm-hmm. Going into this weekend for NCAA basketball, back to where we started on this, just how do you feel? What's the vibe for you with the Illini?
I mean, they certainly look like a team that shouldn't struggle too much to get to the Sweet 16. And I say that this is, I think North Carolina is the team that you wanted, in the sixth spot. That's not a particularly great North Carolina team. They weren't particularly great before he went out with injury. So they're, and I know that it's Fran, and I watched my son is weirdly obsessed with Yale basketball. His grandfather went there, not on my side of the family, obviously. and so he loves Yale basketball. So he was very sad to watch TJ Power kind of destroy them. But like, that is like, if everything has to go wrong for Illinois to lose that game, that is not to say they cannot lose that game, but everything's going to have to go wrong for a team that Illinois basically has every event. Like we've talked about this all year. We've seen the flaws of this team. The team that worries me is Houston. Like, that's a team that really, they've got Houston Flemings, who is exactly the sort of guard that has caused Illinois problems all year. And until Boswell or Stojakovic, who are the only guys who are really going to be able to stop those guys, can start doing that, I am very worried. North Carolina doesn't have that guy. Penn definitely doesn't have that guy. VCU doesn't have that guy. I feel pretty confident going into the Sweet 16. That Houston game, if they win that Houston game, I think we're making the Final Four. I think Houston is the team I'm probably more concerned about than even Florida. That's a really good Houston team. Illinois has lost to Houston in the tournament before, and to the point. Well, remember, that was like a big come to Jesus moment for Underwood as well. We have to get tougher. We have to play different. That actually changed his mindset, that loss, a little bit. So Houston is really, really tough and is obviously very hungry after coming so close last year and not winning. So that's the game I'm worried about. Getting to the Sweet 16, famous last words, I feel pretty confident. The question is, if Illinois makes it to the Sweet 16 and loses to Houston, I think people are going to be really frustrated. I don't know if that's necessarily fair. I think that Houston is really, really good and also one of those top 10 teams that we're talking about with Illinois odds-wise. I mean, they're ahead of Illinois in a lot of those odds. Yep. So the notion that somehow a disappointing falling short loss is not the case. But I think it'll feel that way for a lot of people if that happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I've already set out my revenge tour, right? Okay, you beat Fran, then you beat North Carolina, you get revenge for 05.
Not enough, just to be clear. I've heard a few people say, oh, would that make up for it?
Yes.
No.
Boy,
no.
Beat them in the round of 32.
No, it would
take
not.
That, Sean May.
It would not make up for it, but yes, go ahead.
Yes, but then you can beat Houston. It's revenge for 01, but it's also 08 and Kelvin Sampson stealing Eric Gordon. Then you beat Florida. Remember 2000, the pretty good Illini team, 4 seed, but lost a 5 seed Florida and Teddy DuPay and that Florida team.
Wasn't Kruger the coach of that team?
In 2000, yes.
Yeah, I thought he was.
Yes,
I thought he was.
Yes, that was the
Florida team.
Kruger was the Illinois coach.
Yeah,
playing against his old team where he left to come here and lost to him, and then they went all the way to the championship game. So then if you beat Houston, you could get Florida. If you beat Florida, then you could go, a number of ways. I've set up all these different revenge tours, but it's going to be UConn, okay? You're going to get revenge for the 30-0 run and then beat Michigan in the final. And then at that very moment, I just pass out.
Yeah, I have to say, if that happens, first off, explaining all that to Keaton Wagler will be amazing. Like, okay, I know this means nothing to you, but seriously, you just salvaged my entire 50 years of existence.
But back to what we started with, obviously Brad Underwood is thinking entirely along with Robert Underwood.
But I get that, right? Like, this is the thing, though. Like, we can joke about, like, well, Keaton Wong doesn't care about that. Yeah, but, like, why is Illinois? Why is this fan base so vast? Why is Illinois basketball so popular? Stuff like this. It's stuff like this. It's the idea that we remember all of this stuff. All this stuff matters. That sort of that is real stuff. And like, that's not, I always feel like as a sports fan, whatever the athlete, whether the athlete is younger than you, whether the athlete doesn't have the same background as you, whether the athlete disagrees with you politically, whatever thing you want to attach to them as like human beings, you're cheering for a thing. Sometimes you're cheering for the athlete, sometimes you're cheering for the coach. But what we're really cheering for is this collective experience that we're all having, our own history that we all kind of share. That's what this is. Like, that's what this is. That's why this is cool. And so I like where your head, this is now, I'm gonna when I see my father and my son, both diehard Illini fans, before that game, I'm gonna be like, guys, so I was talking to Robert. Here's how it works. North Carolina, and then Houston. And then I love it. I'm almost gonna be disappointed if one of them loses first. Like, oh, I guess we gotta take out all whoever knocked out Florida, I guess.
I just needed a way to work in Danny Miller making 6 threes for Notre Dame in 03. I still need revenge for that moment. Shea Seals in Tulsa. Wait, wasn't that in Albany? When were you?
That was the year I went.
Okay,
that was the year. My favorite.
You were DI and you went to Albany to cover the first rounds.
Yes.
And we lost to Tulsa.
And I remember interviewing Shelly Clark. That was a big Shelly Clark year, if you'll remember. That was the home invasion year and the suspension and all that sort of stuff. I was the one that actually broke that story. Sorry. I remember interviewing Shelly Clark in the locker room afterwards. He's like, yeah, we just didn't really take this game that seriously because we thought if we just won through, we were going to go to the Sweet 16. I'm like, you're a 12 seed. Like, why are you looking past anybody? And the thing I remember about that Albany trip. One was learning that the Tulsa mascot was a tornado, not a hurricane, but you can't really personify a hurricane. And and two, this is my favorite thing. So there, St. Peter's had a point guard on that team. St. Peter's was there. He had really long hair. He was at that bracket in Albany. And I was a smoker back then. I was a smoker in college. And he was wearing a Nirvana t-shirt to the press conference. And so I talked to him after. I was like, I'm a big Nirvana fan. And so we literally went out and had a cigarette together. Outside of this is how different college basketball has been from now. I looked him up recently.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
He's now in like a Limp Bizkit cover band, like running at like a rock store in New Jersey. Like, so I'm very happy that, so like, I always, like, to me, like, that's a difference. I have a piece in The Athletic today about how my argument is that college basketball right now is actually as good as it has been in a very long time. And I know it's different. Like, I know the time where I was sharing Econ 105 notes with Matt Heldman, that's probably not happening now. I understand it's a different sport. Yep. That doesn't mean that all the other stuff cannot still be better. And I think things are better than that right now.
Well, you just wrote in The Athletic about Bruce Pearl.
Yes.
And
yes.
As a launching point into that column, right?
My Bruce Pearl piece is a separate piece. The other piece just went up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But
I knew you wanted to ask about that, right, Robert?
I mean, anytime we can trash Bruce Pearl, let's do it.
I have
I know we got to get you out of here, but
I have one non Illinois, but Illinois question for Will before.
Okay. We got two left. I'll go Bruce Pearl. You do that. So you've written about it. There's that famous piece. Was it Craggs that wrote the piece?
He edited the piece. It was Daniel Libet was the writer. It was the writer, yes.
Got it. But you have kept this thing alive for years of helping people understand. Like, even seeing him on the selection show was like, I still have this, like, what are we doing? This is a terrible human. Like, why are we okay with all of this? I thought after the Tennessee, you know, the 5-year show cause, like, okay, yes, he's officially a cheater. He's gone. I thought we were done with this, and now he's on CBS. So give me your Bruce Pearl thoughts. Let me know, you know, where you're at with it and what you just wrote in that article.
And I will be careful not to go off the playing field in this conversation, but I will say that, you know, we find ourselves living in an age where malfeasance and corruption is not necessarily immediately addressed. And because of that, Pearl, I think, is someone who the joke about Pearl has always been, listen, all college basketball coaches for years and years and years, they've always cheated, cheat, whatever you, however you want to define cheat. They've always bent the rules a little bit. The joke is always the speed. I used to talk about this with Mark Fox when he was the coach of Georgia. He was a very straight arrow guy. He didn't like that they had shoe deal. The colleges had shoe deals. I'm like, dude, okay, it is not 19.
Not built for the NIL.
It is not 1955. And so I always joke that like the speed limit's 65. Most people go 85. And they're probably not going to get pulled over. Mark Fox went.
I've heard some go faster in Georgia.
Yeah, well, yeah, yes, yes, yes. Mark Fox went 55. Mark Fox went 55.
Sure.
Bruce Pearl went 140. And Pearl's idea was always, yeah, I'm probably going to get pulled over at some point, but hopefully I'll just get there before you. And that's always been the Pearl mindset. But the problem is I always thought, yeah, but that's not going to work eventually, because eventually you are going to get pulled over and eventually you will have to face the ramifications for your actions. One of the most remarkable things about Pearl is he has, like, Pearl does not even particularly pretend that he's not Bruce Pearl. Like even when he says, like, on the broadcast, like, well, I cry every single time that my team makes a tournament bracket. Like, everybody listening to that knows that he's full of it. But like Pearl is just someone that's actively actively full of it, and has always just been like, if I just double down and never apologize and always just keep lying, I'll keep getting away with it. And it has worked. It has worked to the point where he is literally the guy that's been banned by the NCAA 25 years after what happened in Illinois is now the face of the broadcast of the bracket show. To me, was pretty remarkable. I do kind of feel like I was funny because I wrote that and I had a bunch of, I basically wrote, this is who Bruce Pearl is, just to remind everyone. The number of people, I got a bunch of Illinois people that reached out. But what was interesting is I got a bunch of Tennessee people that reached out. I got Auburn people that reached out. I got Wisconsin, Milwaukee people that reached out. Like, clearly this is I got people that have worked with him in the media that reached out. Like, the notion, it feels almost vindicating as an Illinois fan to be like, you know what? We knew what you were 30 years ago. And it feels like a civic duty, really, to keep reminding people of that.
Yes. Yes.
I will say there's probably some people, I wouldn't speak for them, that have moved past it more when it comes to Illinois than Illinois fans.
but I would say a lot of people that were affected by it that are still around, who had their careers altered or even derailed entirely because Pearl just made a bunch of crap up to advance his own career. And he suffered too, right? He got banished to Southern Indiana after that as well. I think there's still people that, like, lives were altered forever, and not just, oh, I really wish that 1990 team would have been better. Like, that affects me as a fan, but like, people's professional lives were forever changed because of that.
And I just want to note before you finish this, I'll be 10 seconds on this. If people don't know, because of he made crap up, as you just said, in 1991, Illinois was banned from the tournament, couldn't go. 1992 and 93, fairly rough seasons because Illinois couldn't recruit off campus. They could only add 2 recruits per year, went down to 8 scholarship players. Like, he really, my 5 years in Champaign, he decimated the program by lying. So, like, he owes me for my entire sports experience in college because of what he did. So, I just want to make sure everyone knows that for you kids that are listening.
I mean, never minding what he did to Jimmy Collins, you know, what he did to Mark Holmes, what he did to all of those and Lou Hinson, of course, as well. Obviously, everyone involved in that, their careers were forever changed.
And now he's on freaking CBS.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, yeah, he's interesting. Let's bring him on. Exactly. Sorry, I'll stop. I'm done. Ask your final question.
One of the things you do, Will, is you write novels, and one that is featured over your shoulder for our viewers is Lloyd McNeil's Last Ride. But last year, I think I read The Time Has Come by you, and I'm always fascinated, whether it's Mad Men or a Will Leach novel, where do names come from? And here's my Illini connection. I believe it was a minor character. There was two, I think, that had, but the one that I remember in that novel, there was somebody with the name Tepper.
Yes.
And I wondered, is that, for those who know, if you're reading a Will Leach novel, are there little Easter eggs of Illini fans, for Illini fans, was that unintentional? But the other thing is, where do you come up with all your names as a creator? Like, you just, you spin a wheel and see what comes up?
I think the book also has a Curbelo.
Yes, yes. That's where, yes. I remember that now. Yes. Why did I forget that?
And, that's great.
And the reason for, in all seriousness, it's funny. I've actually gotten in trouble for the past for people in my life. Like, how did you name that guy Gary? Is that after this person? I'm like, no, the names, like, and there's that, names are, one thing I hate about novels is when people try to make names metaphorical. Like, oh, well, their names, that character's name's Eve because it represents renewal or a new beginning. No one knows who it's going to be when you name the kid. The kid's just a name. So I try to make the names in all my books as random as possible. Generally, the way that I do that is I think I'm writing character and then, I have to come up with a character for this name. And I think when I did the Curbelo name, I think I was frustrated because it was shortly after the concussion and he was not quite the same player that he was before. And I just had him on my brain. So I'm putting in Curbelo, and I'm sure these things bubble up from the subconscious, but there's definitely not a, this character was really good as an assistant specific job, but then when you gave them the larger job, they were unable to do that. So let's name them Temper.
They were in over their head.
Let's name them Temper. Yes. So it's not metaphorical, but yes, it can't help but pop up. There's always an Illini reference. Even these books all take place in Georgia and they have nothing to do with sports, but inevitably there's a Cardinals reference. There's things that pop up. There's always a Matt Toon reference in each of the books. Certain levels, they all have to get in there somewhere.
Well, this has been a treat. Hope you enjoy the tournament and hope you get to watch 6 Illini games this spring.
Absolutely. And my last thing on this, we've been putting together a family vacation for about 5 years, since COVID. We've been trying to build up this big vacation. We're going to Anguilla over the boys' spring break this year. We land in Atlantic time about an hour and a half before tip-off of the first game of the Final Four. So I've always vowed that if Illinois made the Final Four, I would go. And it's in Indianapolis, which, of course, is the closest place it would possibly be to Matt Toon. And so my wife she wants me to be happy, so she's rooting for Illinois, but she'd rather not have our trip complicated. So so we'll see what happens one way or the other. But if Illinois makes it, I don't know how I'm going to be able to resist that.
We'll hope to see you there.
Yes.
Thanks, Will.
Be safe.
Be well.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
That was enjoyable.
Very. Incredibly enjoyable.
I felt bad because, like I said, I kind of wanted to just listen to you guys talk.
I feel bad because I never ask questions. I just make statements and let him launch into the next thing.
Yeah, we were kind of, you know what? You can pass the ball to Will and he'll...
You're right.
He'll advance it down the field for
you're
you.
Right. You're right.
He'll help you make some progress. But it was a good conversation. There was one thing, though, that was new for me, living in triple box world there for a moment on the podcast if you were viewing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's times when, okay, so I'm looking at the monitor to talk with Will,
mm-hmm.
and so he's looking back, okay, like this. But then now he's talking and you're talking, and I'm looking over here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in a box world, so people may like, why are you looking at the side of a box?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
I think you just stayed on the monitor the whole time.
Look at me, huh? Like, I'm learning how to
do
this.
I've never been in triple box world.
That's right. That's right. I got to learn how to do that. Maybe we need some of those, like, lights for, and there are the ways to do that when you're doing the box thing of like a ring will be influencers, will be, you know, doing makeup tutorials before too long.
Yeah. Good stuff. I think that was a great setup for the NCAA tournament weekend.
Definitely. Definitely. Really puts a frame around it. That's what's possible here. Aha.
Put three frames around
yes,
it.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So yeah, I'm ready.
Thanks to our hosts here inside the U of I Armory, the Center for Teaching and Innovation at Learning at the U of I, and thanks to today's producer, Kevin Southworth. Enjoy the NCAA tournament. Hope your brackets stay intact. Until next time, for Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. We'll see you again when we light the eye.